Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, psychic medium Sherry, Joe Pinohu, and Joel Walling. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, but also step outside the box a bit and discuss current events. Great conversation among friends. Thanks for taking the time on this wonderful Sunday to tune into another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, and we have a full house tonight. We're going to dig into some serious conspiracy theory. We have co-host psychic Sherry. We have Joel. We have Michael. It's going to be a conspiracy fest. It's going to be a conspiracy extravaganza. So I don't even know where to start. I think we're going to talk a little 9/11, so I don't know who wants to crack that egg open. Any volunteers? Start with that.
It's no matter. That's one of the few conspiracies I'm actually like a hardcore believer in, to be totally honest with you. We were talking a little bit about that at the end of last week. Kind of got this a whole idea going. It's just planes don't fly that low. For the Pentagon, Michael could explain a lot more on that. He knows more about the planes than I ever did. But then you also look at, like, the only way a building is actually going to collapse into its own footprint is a controlled demolition. That's taking the... taking the whole conspiracy into a broad brushstroke there. But, you know, those are just basically things that draw your attention to it. It's like, you know, you see, you could look this stuff up online. And, I mean, this is well-documented stuff. And I'm not talking from, you know, weird websites or whatever. This was like making national news in different countries and things. There have been high-rise buildings burn for days. And they don't collapse. These steel-structured high-rise buildings can burn for days.
Let's also remember that when we designed the World Trade Center, it was designed to take a hit from the largest airplane at the time, I believe, was the 707. So it was designed to get hit with a jetliner.
When they build the buildings, and at one time, the two towers were number one and number two tallest buildings in the world. You know, they design them for that kind of thing. And a lot of people don't even realize the wind capacity once you reach that height. I mean, we're talking like the wind at the ground level might be a calm breeze, but when you get that far up into the air, you're looking at winds of, you know, 100 miles an hour. They're talking, you know, look at the stuff that they have on the Empire State Building. And if I'm not mistaken, the Empire State Building was about half the size of one of the towers. You know, it was the tallest building at the time of its build.
I think it was hit by a plane. I want to say a B-29 Liberator, but a large plane, and it collapsed a hell of a lot older.
Yeah. And that's actually a good point. It was when it was originally built. I think it has been hit by two different planes. Because, you know, they didn't expect a building up that high. And here they go flying into it, and there it is. You know, so, yeah, they were hit. Buildings of this size are weird enough to say that they do expect to kind of get hit by things. Hit by the planes, hit by different types of degree of strong wind gust. So they're built on a different level of engineering than what your normal, like, two-story house or even, you know, four- or five-story building. You know, I live – one of the largest buildings where I live in Lexington is the bank building. The name of the bank that owns it actually is escaping me at the moment. But it's this gigantic blue building, and it's like twice as high as anything around it. And, you know, they worked in designing that for years before it was actually built, just on that fact. You know, they haven't worried about planes because it's not that high. It's not like skyscrapers in New York or anything. But, you know, they had to, different weather patterns and things like that, they have to take into account these buildings for stability. And that's one of the reasons that these buildings are very hard to collapse unless it's a controlled explosion. Because if these buildings were to go, you got to think about it. If this building was to go to the left or to the right in a collapse, think about a building that's, you know, what was, I think one of the Trade Center buildings was 120 stories. Think how much that's going to take out in New York if it falls to the left or right, where everything is packed in tight. It's going to collapse. It's going to hit how many buildings, how many apartments, how many businesses.
And let's not forget that World Trade Center 7, while it did receive some damage on one side and had fire, also collapsed. And that wasn't even a direct hit by an airplane.
Yeah, that's another one. That's one that Michael, I'll get him to chime in on this one, because that's one he has taught, he's looked in a lot, because honestly, even if you look at the damage that was received by the first two buildings and say, okay, it's conceivable that they would collapse with this. Like you said, Building 7 wasn't even hit.
It was the equivalent basically of an office fire, like a fire in a trash can or some damn thing. It wasn't, and actually the Building 7 was supposed to be the command center for disaster. It was a disaster command center, was in Building 7. You know, like the mayor and the chief of police and the chief of the fire department and all the people that were, you know, all the emergency services were all supposed to go there. That was a command center location in case they had a disaster. That's where they were supposed to go. And they didn't go there. But then the building got pulled. And you even heard somebody on there that morning say it, because I heard them say it. We had to pull it. Pulling it is a term they use for a controlled demolition. But there was no reason to pull that building. That building also fell into its own footprint. It was a controlled demolition, but why? What was in that building? I mean, I hate to sound like a damn paranoid fuck. I mean, I do. I mean, I hate that. I'm smarter than that, and I know I am. But some things just don't smell right. And this never has. What was in that building that somebody didn't want somebody else to see? Why was that building demolished? It wasn't hit by an airplane. There was no reason for it to be destroyed.
It's hard to even, I'm certainly not an expert, but I've done quite a bit of research into it. I mean, there was a lot of shady stuff going on before it was even hit, with workers coming in and shutting off certain systems and just all sorts of contractors that were tied to shady agencies. And there's something really fishy about it, and the fact that they collapsed is really unusual, that three buildings collapsed from fire and a plane impact when you have, like you said earlier, buildings that burn for days. And people are going to say, well, the damage from the airplanes, well, they were designed for that specifically because they're so tall. They're over 1,300 feet tall. And so they foresaw the fact that airplanes could crash into them. And, I mean, you tie everything with the Pentagon and everything together, it just, it's super, super fishy. Like, even the, when they were sorting through all the evidence that was scattered around New York, they found one of the IDs of one of the hijackers. Like, how random is that? How did that not burn up? Like, how do you randomly just find hijackers? I mean, there's like dozens of things like that that just make you scratch your head. And, you know, maybe it is all legit and we weren't involved, but there were some documents or something that were in the Trade Center that had to do with a massive debt or something that were destroyed. So there was a motive to do that, not to mention the motive of creating a police.
You have to remember that the day before that happened, the Pentagon announced that it was missing a huge amount of money. I have to look that up. I don't really remember the exact amount, but the day before the towers, on 9/10, that same morning, the Pentagon announced it was missing money. I mean, a lot of money. I'm talking about $1.50 in trading stamps there. I'm talking about a lot.
Yeah, I heard that there was something to do with the money and like that. And you look at the Pentagon and it's like, they just happened to crash into a section that was like under renovation. So there wasn't very many people there. And then they have the Pentagon, like every government place is covered in cameras and they release like what, 3 or 4 frames of security footage. Like, yeah, it's just ridiculous. What do you think, Sherry? We're talking a lot.
Oh, that's okay. No, I'm listening. I don't know much about it, but I think it was. I wonder what they really. Go ahead. It's like, what's the ulterior motive? What were they hiding, basically?
On 9/10, the day before, Donald Rumsfeld announced that they were missing $2.3 trillion. Trillion with a T. $2.3 trillion.
Whoops.
Very next morning, all this stuff happened. It just so happens that the part of the Pentagon that was actually hit was the office that was investigating that. The Pentagon had just been renovated. They were doing an inspection, and there was one section that had been done that was strike hardened. So that if it got hit, it could withstand the damage. And they were doing an inspection. You know how the Pentagon is shaped, you know. So they're doing it like a section at a time, all three walls in. And wherever the projectile would hit, it hit just outside of the strike-hardened zone. But it just so happens that the area that it hit was the office where that was investigating the missing money.
Where's the plane? There was no plane at the Pentagon.
Well,
you think
I know,
the wingspan of the jet like 200 feet, 100 whatever feet, and you don't see strike marks from the wings. You don't see holes from the engines. There's virtually no evidence of an airplane. And even when you see an airplane, I mean, virtually every plane crash has some sort of debris, even if it's small. But yet
there's no possible way that airplane, and actually Pilots for 9/11 Truth, the pilots organization, the airline pilots came and said that's not possible. You cannot fly a plane that large, that fast, that low to the ground. The wings will break off. It would have fallen to pieces before it ever got to the Pentagon. It would have been on the middle of a highway somewhere, way the hell back, because it couldn't have got there. Because the lower you go in the atmosphere, the the thicker the air is, which means the slower you have to fly. That's why a plane can't do 500 knots 20 feet off the ground, because the air pressure will tear it apart. The lift will tear it apart. That's how a plane lifts off the ground, because the air is heavy, low down, and it lifts with the speed, the full momentum. The lift of the air under the wings of the airlines causes the plane to rise. That's how it goes up. So there's no possible way that damn airplane can fly that low to the ground and hit a building at almost ground level. And if you look at the pictures, before it collapsed, the roof of the Pentagon was still visible. The roof section was still on. So you're telling me that an airplane, I got to look up how high that damn thing is, but the tail section would have took the roof out if it hit it. And the roof was still, roof collapsed after the fire.
Just look at the comparative damage. I mean, we know there were planes flown into the World Trade Center. You know, we clearly saw the planes doing that.
And the wings,
but look
left.
At the damage comparative.
Yeah.
I mean, you could fit the Pentagon inside of the holes that were left by the planes in the side of the World Trade Center. Because the Pentagon is not—it's not a huge building, tall, you know, height-wise. It's not like a 100-story department or 100-story, you know, office building. It's a few-story, typical office building.
I'm just going to say it. It was a Tomahawk cruise missile, which is designed to fly feet above the ground to avoid radar detection. There, I said it.
You know, honestly, when I was looking into it, I found two things, and that one of them it would have fit with a Tomahawk, and it also would have fit with a drone. You know, a lot of people think of the privatized drones that we have, the stuff you can buy in stores. Well, the military have them that are drastically larger. They are, you know, and these things, they have the capability of doing that. They also have the capability of carrying warheads. You know, those are the two things that match up well with it, with the amount of damage. What could have hit, could have been at that level, could have caused that amount of damage with minimal debris, without taking out parts of the building that would have been compromised otherwise.
And we would have additional footage of the incident, but the FBI shortly after seized all the CCTV footage from the neighboring hotels and gas stations. So they were very quick to make that information disappear. And another interesting coincidence, on the eastern seaboard, the fighter wing that was protecting the East Coast, that area, New York area, just happened to be a couple hundred miles north doing an exercise. That's just an interesting coincidence.
Yeah, you would actually figure at a time that the actual sitting president was traveling by air, you'd figure they wouldn't want them too far away from him. He was in Florida, if I'm not mistaken. That's my thought. You're going to put the president of the United States in an airplane, and then you're going to call the people away that would be, you know, the first line of defense if someone were to try to attack. You're going to make sure they're as far away from him as possible.
Do you think Bush knew what was going on?
No, actually, I don't. I don't, honestly. I think, not to open up that ball of that can of worms again, but I fully think Bush was strictly a puppet for an agenda he had no clue existed. I think that's why 99% of his cabinet and his people were his father's former people. Because I think George W. had about as much sense as a a turnip. I mean, any guy that gets on national television and says he's going to use strategery in finding Osama bin Laden, you know, that's the guy's not got he's not playing with a full deck.
Yeah.
And I think he.
Yeah.
Is Osama bin Laden even real? Is Al Qaeda even real? I mean,
you got to remember something about Osama bin Laden, and that's something that a lot of people do overlook with him.
He worked for
us. He was actually a CIA operative.
Yeah,
Al Qaeda was armed and trained by the CIA to fight Russia in Afghanistan. That is why they exist. His technology, his arms, everything he knew came from us. And
you know, actually, the guys at Alex Station that were looking for bin Laden, but bin Laden was one of us as far as the intelligence community was concerned. And I believe his covert name was Tim Osman, I think is what I read. I mean, he's a 6-foot-tall Arab guy on dialysis. You're telling me you can't find him? He's got to go get dialysis. I mean, he was traveling to hospital. You can't put a dialysis machine in a cave. You know, you got to have power and other stuff. And on top of that, I think he was actually Saudi. A lot of the people involved in this thing were Saudis, who are supposed to be our allies. You know, I mean, and like you said before, it just so happens that they were doing exercises on the day this happened for radar, for hijacking and different stuff. They didn't know for a long time when things were going on, if it was a real world event or if it was part of their exercise. They couldn't get airplanes because none of the planes that were supposed to be in the defense sector were, hell, who knows how many miles away doing something else. So New York had no air cover. Look up Project Northwoods.
Yeah, that was an exact.
Northwoods.
That wasn't that thing where it basically had a plan to do this with the exact same way by crashing airplanes. It was like a false flag attack kind of thing that was planned by the government back in the 60s or 70s. And so the government's been thinking about this and planning it.
You'd like to think that they did. You'd like to think that. But, I mean, I don't know. I need to preface it by saying that we make nothing light of the loss of life of all those people. Because there are people on those airplanes, and there are people on the ground, and there are firemen and policemen and paramedics that got killed. You know, and that was horrible. There was not anything good that day. But some of the things that happened just don't make sense.
And 90% of the things that happened that don't make sense.
Just let it go, but you know, if you let too much stuff go, you know, then I think you have to hold people accountable. You know, at some point. And sadly, that wasn't done. I mean, those bozos that were supposed to be the ones flying those planes, they couldn't even fly a Cessna.
Yeah, they were poor pilots, according to their instructor.
They couldn't even fly a Cessna. So there's no way they could have flown an airplane. They would have had to have flown it to hit the Pentagon. That kind of a maneuver, they tried it. They put actual airline pilots in simulators and tried to have them simulate the attack on the Pentagon in a flight simulator. They couldn't do it. guys that had hundreds of hours in the airplanes, the commercial airline pilots could not maneuver that aircraft to hit that building. And you're going to tell me that some bozo with 5 hours of flight time in a Cessna can do that? No. I'm sorry. I don't buy it.
Now, you know, Jason, you actually came out with another interesting point. The things were found after the crash that, like, I believe the passport of the two hijackers was found. You know, their passports
were found.
Now, their whole premise behind the building collapsing was that the jet fuel burned so hot and so fast that it melted steel. But it did. I mean, I assume if most people would know what a passport was like, and it didn't melt that. It can melt steel, but a flimsy ass passport book is indestructible to this searing heat.
I mean, they're huge fireballs. I suppose it's possible, but I just don't see it. I mean, yeah, stuff's going to fly around the air, maybe as the plane's impacting, but really the majority of that stuff is going to just get consumed within the building, within the fireball.
Right. Well, see, that's the thing. I would have believed it if it was something from inside the building that flew out. Because I could see that. The impact would hit, there would be the explosion, and it would push stuff away from it. But when you have something inside of the plane that is supposed to have made it through the explosion, through the fireball that ensued after the explosion, and then landed safely in the ground and the debris where it could be found, that's where you get into a little more of the a little more into the impossible realm. Especially now, if it was one, again, it might be a little bit more, okay, maybe it did. I don't hear a lot of other people's identification and passports and stuff like that, especially since you would assume it's inside of their luggage. I mean, a passport, since they were an overseas traveler, they are not allowed to travel without the actual full passport book. So we're talking probably about a 6-inch by 4-inch or 6-inch by 5-inch book that actually opens up and has pages. So, you know, how this got out of a bag and miraculously landed and was unscathed. That's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was some speculations regarding the collapse of the World Trade Centers that a substance called nanothermite was used, which is, I don't know if thermite, I believe, is basically mixing rust with aluminum dust or something. Anyway, it burns super hot and melts steel, and there's a newer version of that called nanothermite. And I remember watching some videos where it shows molten slag coming out of areas of the World Trade Center prior to it collapsing. So there was also some microscopic evidence from the debris that nanothermite was used in the collapse. Whether or not that's true or not, I don't know, but that's been thrown out there that there is evidence of that.
Yeah. You know, there would have to have been something to have, because in order to have caused it to drop the way it did and go straight down, normally, if anyone's ever watched the demolition, you see that it blows it out. Boom, each floor blows, and it kind of collapses. They would need something to burn inside of it and burn the structure down. Something to weaken it and make it happen. It wouldn't have been able to have been done in a normal controlled demolition way, where you would have blown out the main floors and caused it to collapse in on itself. That just would have been, too obvious. I mean, honestly, it would have been too obvious to have seen that happen, just boom, boom, boom. But if you put something in like that, that was melting the steel as it burned, and that could have been spread by would have looked like it spread by natural means in a fire. You know, one floor would have caught, then the next one, and the next one, and it would have went on and on and on and on and on until enough floors were caught. That's something that could have been done remotely and could have actually made a controlled demolition that would have not have looked like a like an actual explosion, like when they blow up buildings.
And you could probably just put that thermite, yeah, you don't have to do the whole building. I imagine that if you just did a few floors and weakened the steel so the top floors collapse, just the force from the, you know, the top floors would probably just bring it down like a house of cards. You probably just have to compromise one section of the building to get that whole thing rolling.
Yeah, actually, that's exactly what you would need to do. It is possible to do it from one area where it wouldn't have to be each one. It could cause it to collapse down on itself if you just hit the right structural spots. See, every building has its structural weak points. Regardless of how well the building's made, there's always a structural weak point. You know, I'm a mason. I mean, I've done bricklaying and brickwork. There's always a structural weak point in where you're, what you're doing. That one spot, if you hit just right, everything's going to collapse. If that was what was the target, and that, you know, was hit before or hit after the initial impact, then yes, it all could have dropped, and it would not have needed to have been, you know, a grandiose, massive explosion.
And what about the owner of the World Trade Center, whatever his name is, I can't remember. He took out some massive policy shortly before that 9/11. That's coincidental as well.
You know, I had heard a little bit about that. I don't know if Michael's heard about on that one or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he took out $100 million policy for actually, I think he took it out for actually for airplanes in the building. And I think that actually they got paid twice because it was two airplanes. It was two occurrences. So he got like $200 million.
And wasn't it like weeks before, like within weeks of the attack?
Yeah.
I mean, it was close.
It was like, yeah. Not to mention all the put options. If you look at the day before, the put options in the stock market, the put option is when you foresee a stock going down, and there's a put option on it, like on American Airlines. When this happened, American Airlines tanked. American Airlines stock. Well, I can't talk. American Airlines stock tanked. The people that had put options on American Airlines made a lot of money. How do they know to put a put option on a stock the day before an airplane hit a building unless they knew the airplane was going to hit the building?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of coincidences. And at some point you have to say, okay, this is just too many coincidences. I mean, a coincidence here and there, okay, maybe. But this whole situation is riddled with coincidence one after the other.
No, it's more like fuckery.
Yeah, fuckery too.
It's like
we've said before with like not to get kind of off the beaten path, but I've said it a lot. When you look at something like with cryptozoology, like with Sasquatch, Bigfoot, that you've got dozens of native tribes, because at the time that the legends actually started, there were just native tribes. You've got them in North America. You've got them in South America. You've got them in the Asian continent. You've got them in this kind. All of these groups that had no clue the other groups existed, yet they had they all have the same thing, this monstrous thing in common. When you look at connections like that, you got to say at some point, okay, maybe there was something there. And it's just like this. You know, you're looking at it and you're going, well, this person took out insurance policy against airplanes hitting the building 5 days before two airplanes hit the building. And, you know, these people started dumping stock in an airline company before two of their planes were flown into the building that the guy just collected $200 million on. And, you know, and then on all of it, there's $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon. So, you know what? We're going to hit a plane. A plane's going to hit it too. You know, you start looking at it and going, okay, I can count the potato and I've got there now, you know. It's when you start seeing everything that you've got to kind of take a step back and go, wait a minute. All of this can't just be random coincidence. I'm okay with some random coincidence, but then when you get into that level, at some point you got to go, okay, who's, you know, are they thinking we're stupid?
Oh, yeah. So the motive, what do you think the motive was? You think it was for the Patriot
money.
Act to become a police state and money?
It was not money.
I do think, well, now this is one, and this is actually one that I do not believe in. We're talking about conspiracy, since we're talking about conspiracies. Everyone talks about the one world government and how all of this, I don't believe in that.
Yeah.
Because I do not believe you would
that.
Ever get everyone to agree to one specific thing. That's why I don't think there was one motive to it. I think in order for everyone to have gotten on the same page, everyone would have had to have had a reason to agree to this. Or you were going to end up, somebody was going to turn on somebody else. And that is where I think you've got, like, I think they wanted a chance to go to war in Afghanistan and Iraq.
The
Pentagon screwed up and lost a hell of a lot of money, and I think they were trying to cover that up. I think, you know, there was a lot going on.
You know, the military-industrial complex, and they warned about that earlier. Which president was it? Help me out here, Joe. Was it Truman? One of the presidents actually warned people about the military-industrial complex. And, I mean, you know, there's a lot of money in war. Especially when you're financing both sides. You know, you get some of these arms manufacturers and stuff, you know, they're producing weapons for us, and then you find out there's a little weapon for the other guy too. You know? They're perpetuating their own damn war. And it's about money. A lot of money. I mean, we're talking pallets and pallets of damn money involved here. And to these people to do this, you know, I hate to be a person like they. Who are they? Well, they are the people in the military-industrial complex, you know, that finance these operations. And they work for the government. I mean, look at the government. Look at outfits like Blackwater and other contract agencies that are contracted by the U.S. government to provide men in combat zones. You know, they're basically hired guns.
It's money.
You know. It all comes back to money.
I decided to look that up because I hate when I draw blank on something. It was Eisenhower in his farewell address when he was getting ready to leave office. He said, "Yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, our resources, and livelihoods are all involved. So is this very structure, or so is the very structure of our society. In the Council of Governments, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought. That was his speech on the military complex.
Well, it's a crazy world we live in. I mean, you ever watch those videos of the jumpers off and how, I mean, can you imagine how horrible that is? Or the phone calls from the people that were trapped in there as the fire was spreading? Horrific. I just couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, putting somebody through that and being able to sleep at night over money. But I guess there are sociopathic bigwigs out there that can do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, just look at regular, your average corporate America. I mean, I made jokes about this. The company I worked for when this pandemic all started, the gas station was, you know, they're sitting there making all of these speeches and talking about how important it is to guard our customers, and you're the front line of defense, and you're such essential workers. And I actually had a paper in my wallet that allowed me to travel if our country was shut down in a if it actually went to martial law, so I could go to work, because it was that important that I go to that gas station and work.
That's,
and then you get a big thing that says, remember, folks, to wash your hands. That's our pat on the back. They did when, like, Walmart and Kroger and all the grocery stores and all this stuff started giving people, like, huge bonuses and more per hour. They did increase our wage by $2 an hour and then promptly cut hours company-wide by 10. So that we actually ended up making $20 less a week versus what we did before they gave us the $2 an hour raise.
Huh.
You know, we were essential. We were heroes. We got pats on the back and told how important we were. But in the grand scheme of things, that company did not give a rat's ass about us. As long as we were there. And this is one, I will come right out and talk about that. You know, like I said, these people do not give a shit about the little guy. We are expendable.
Oh, that's I'm going through that.
We are the, what's that?
I'm going through that right now, and I work in a hospital testing COVID.
Yeah.
And it's getting shit on by.
It's right there. One of my friends that worked there, she had a baby. It was premature. And her doctor said it would be wise for her to take some time off to let everything kind of get figured out would be the safest way of her coming back to work. So she brought this notice in, turned it in. They have kept her employed there for almost a year, yet have refused to let her come to work. They've kept her employed so she cannot claim unemployment, but won't let her return to work until the pandemic is over. They won't lay her off.
Is this corporation?
They just won't let her work. What's that?
Was that corporation or HR? Human Resources Department?
Corporate. It was corporate.
Oh, yeah.
Corporate, actually. I injured myself at work one time. It was a stupid injury. I twisted my knee wrong when I was stepping back to look at something, and I aggravated a ligament. Nothing major. Ice pack. I wore a brace. I was good in the week. But it was known that it happened at work. So my boss talked to me. She's like, how bad is it? She actually called me. She's like, how bad is it? And I was like, it's not bad. I was like, I'm giving it some rest. I had a couple of days off. I was like, if it's still sore tomorrow before I come back in, I'll go to the doctor and have it checked out. And she's like, okay. She goes, then this call never happened. This is between you and me right now. I'm like, why is that? She's like, because if corporate hears about this, they will basically, it's not official, but it's basically punishment. They would have made me miss about a month's work until one of their doctors cleared me, even if my doctor said I could come back to work. And that's corporate punishment for filing anything for workman's comp. You are automatically guaranteed to miss at least a month's work.
I went through this, so I got to chime in because, oh, my God. So I spent 18 years catching shoplifters, and I worked for a large retail corporation. And one day I was chasing a shoplifter, and the sliding glass door collided with me just as I was catching up to him. And I broke my leg and needed surgery, you know, plates and pins and all that. So I went through all that. I had surgery, was off for a while, went back to work. And just when I get back to work, the corporation went out of its way to get rid of me. Like, they would come in and find every little thing to document me out of there. And that same corporation did the same thing to another friend that got hurt there. It's shady. Shady, shady.
Mm-hmm. But that's the way corporations look at us. We are pawns in a chess game. We mean nothing.
Probably less than pawns. We're the dust on the chessboard.
Pretty much. You know, a lot of corporations look at us like that. You will find the occasional one that is a great place, but most of them, they don't care.
Is there a way we can fight it as citizens when they get too big?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't really see one.
They have the money.
They got the money. They just wear you out in court. Even if it went to court, they'd wear you out in court. The lawyer bill would kill you.
Because the first thing they're going to do is file continuances. They're going to file, they're going to stretch it out so long, you're not going to have the money to fight it.
Because remember,
the first thing they do with all of it is to take away your livelihood. That's the first move, is they take it to where you are not making any money. So you can't support your family, you can't pay your bills, you can't buy food, you can't, you know, that's their first step. They take away all of that from you. So right there, they throw you in debt. And then if they say, you want to take this to court and fight it, sure. You get your lawyer, we'll get our lawyers. And right there, you're already in debt.
Because you have one and they have 20.
Right. Lawyers are not cheap. Like, my girlfriend's actually going through a personal matter, and her lawyer, and she was rather cheap, was a $250 retainer and $250 an hour.
That's so
ridiculous.
And that's
cheap. Most lawyers in this town are usually a $1,500 retainer and $500 an hour.
But then I wouldn't have made $500 an hour.
It makes you think about going in for a law degree, huh?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I had a dime for every time I'm like, you know what? I'm in the wrong field.
I said that for years. And, you know, the other conspiracies, too. I mean, getting away from 9/11 for a bit, but there are other ones. I mean, like, and they all kind of are wrapped up together back in that period of time. Back in the late 50s, early 60s, you know, that whole Kennedy era.
I was about to say, because 99% of them have the name Kennedy attached on somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you know, Joe Kennedy, the father, was a bootlegger. And I know he was a bootlegger because he used to run whiskey with my grandfather. Our grandfather is about as Irish and Catholic as you can get from Boston, and he used to run liquor with old man Kennedy. So I know it for a fact. But you know, with Kennedy, with Bobby, and with John, and then with Marilyn Monroe, and there were other people too. There was Mary Meyer, and she was murdered. She was shot. And the man that they arrested for it was acquitted by a wonderful, wonderful attorney, an African American woman named Debbie Roundtree. And she put up a defense and she just tore their ass up in court. I mean, they didn't stand a chance against Debbie Roundtree. She was tough. And she let them have it, and her client was acquitted. But they never did arrest anybody else for it. Her husband, she was one of Jack Kennedy's girlfriends after Marilyn. And her husband was Cord Meyer, and Cord Meyer was the second in command under Jesus Angleton at CIA. Angleton at the time was in charge of dirty tricks, covert CIA. So the CIA was all wrapped up in that. They were wrapped up in Marilyn Monroe. There's actually a document that I don't know if any of you guys know Dr. Stephen Greer, the ER doctor that's got all the classified documents on the UFOs and stuff. The what do they call that? The disclosure project, I believe is what he calls it. He actually got in there is a copy of the CIA memo stating that Marilyn Monroe needs to be eliminated. And that was dated about 3 days before she died and signed by Angleton. So I have doubt that was not a suicide. She was going to go public. She had pillow talks. She was going to go public, and it would not have been good. And she was killed. I firmly believe that. Another one that kind of ties into the same thing. Do any of y'all ever remember Dorothy Kilgallen?
Mm-hmm. No.
She was a columnist, kind of a gossip columnist, sort of. Kind of like all the dirt on all the stars, you know, and comings and goings, who was sleeping with who, and that kind of thing. Well, Dorothy Kilgallen was the only person to interview Lee Harvey Oswald. She interviewed Oswald for over an hour. She went back to her office and said that she was going to blow the lid off the Kennedy assassination with what she got. And she was found dead under mysterious circumstances not long after. I'll tell you some of the circumstances she was found in and tied to something else. If we got time, she was found in her guest room, in bed, fully clothed, with a book in her hand, with no glasses on. Okay, the book in her hand was upside down. She had to have eyeglasses to read. She wouldn't have been reading a book without her eyeglasses. And the book was upside down. Now, remember that. Okay, fast forward a few years. Pope John Paul I in the Vatican was found dead by the nun who always went to wake him up every morning at 5:30. He was found dead in bed, fully clothed, with a book in his hand. The book was upside down, and he had glasses on, but he didn't wear glasses to read. Does that sound familiar?
Sounds like somebody staging something, maybe.
Exactly what it sounds like. Also, in the case of the Pope, he was Pope for 33 days. There was no autopsy. He was embalmed right after he was found. That was a crazy thing. That whole thing, that was crazy too. That was during the, that goes back to money again. That was during the middle of the Vatican bank scandal with all the laundered money and Roberto Calvi and all those guys. And a lot of those cardinals had families that were actually the mafia, five families in New York. You know, some of those cardinals were actually family members, blood family of the New York crime families. They were cardinals in the Vatican. A lot of shit there. I mean, if you dig into this stuff, after a while you'll see overlapping names. You know, like Angleton and CIA, or stuff with the Pope and the circumstances surrounding one death versus another death. And you'll see the connections. I mean, I'm not making this shit up. They're in there. But if you read enough books and have enough accounts of what was actually reported, and you start to see patterns come out. In the case of the Pope, he actually wanted to feed people that were poor and make women and let women enter the priesthood. And that didn't go over well with a bunch of those people there. He was only Pope for 33 days. And he was toast. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of stuff went on. Monroe, Kilgallen, Meyer, and a lot of things that happened with Kennedy had very far-reaching effects after that. Because think what would have happened if Kennedy had not died. We would have never went into Vietnam. He was going to pull him out. That would have cost the military-industrial complex a lot of money. Think about how much money was made on Vietnam. Notwithstanding all the lives that were lost, but think of all the money.
Cost a lot of lives.
60,000 people died, 64,000 people died, so some rich people could be richer.
Pretty much.
Wow.
That's the story. That is the story of the world from day one on. You know, there was a song by System. I don't know if you've all heard of the band System of a Down, but they literally have a song that's whole chorus is why do they start the war? I can't remember the chorus. Why do they always send the poor? Why do presidents start the war? Why do they always send the poor? That's it, over and over and over and over again. And that's exactly what has happened from the beginning. You remember, you know, even back in Roman and Greek times, they would send slaves. Slaves were soldiers. You know, then you look even in more recent times in the United States, during the Civil War in the 1800s, they were literally had people sitting at the docks. And as soon as you got off the boat, they were like, you sign up to military service, we'll give you five acres or 10 acres of land and a mule. And people are thinking, oh, okay, hell yeah, let's do this. And okay, you got to go over there, do basic training, you're getting ready to be put to the front line. And then it's like, wait, what happened? A lot of the slaves that had fled the South, the first thing they did were rounded up by the army and made a platoon. You know, that's the story of mankind from the beginning.
Well, it's a crazy world we live in, and it looks like we're running out of time, and I got a pot roast to eat. So now, can you remind the listeners where they can listen to your podcast?
Yeah, we're still going live. Although this Saturday we will not be live, it'll be pre-recorded and have no clue what it's actually going to be about because it's going to be pre-recorded, but that you can always find on Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Google Podcast, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Alexa, just about anywhere you want to find it. The Paranormal Night Stalker is there. We do put out something every Saturday night at 10 o'clock.
Don't forget our book giveaway, Joe.
Yeah. No, I mentioned something about it last week, but I apparently was in Facebook jail and my posts weren't working so good. So I periodically get put in Facebook jail and don't know about it. They don't bother telling me. They're just like, oh, hell, just put him in there again. But so I couldn't post anything for the book, but we are going to be starting tomorrow a giveaway for a free copy of I Want to Believe by Jason Hewitt and Pete Wren. This is going to be kind of a cross thing. Like I said, I'm going to be putting the way you get to win it on Paranormal Horizons and the Night Stalker. You know, everybody just enter it in. If you don't want to wait to see if you win, I will be sending it straight to your door from Amazon. So it don't matter where you're at. Amazon gets everywhere. It just might take a little longer to get to you than normal. But, you know, if you don't want to wait, it will have a link in there to buy a copy of it. It's an exceptional book. And like I said, we're trying to help a friend out and get something that I think is definitely worth being spread in the paranormal community, kind of out there and to the general public by giving a copy of it away. So that will be posted either sometime tonight or tomorrow. I'm shooting for tonight, but we all know how that goes. I've been good the past week, so I should not be in Facebook jail anymore. So hopefully that improves, but we never know with Facebook.
That is true. Do you got anything, Sherry?
No, not at all. Just enough. And I just want to plug in. I've got to go to work tonight. I work the night shift. So as soon as we get done, I've got to eat and grab a bite to eat. But anybody want to get a hold of me, Psychic Medium Sherry, you can plug me in at first of all, you can plug me in on Facebook, Psychic Medium Sherry, at Cherry. Go ahead and press like and send me a message if you're interested. But also you can reach me at my website at www.psychicmediumsherry.weebly.com. And I do have a URL, but I forgot. So sorry about that.
tinyurl.com/SherryWeb.
All right. I'm going to have to write that down. Oh, my gosh. Hey, guys, take care. And thank you, Joel. Joel is co-host with us, and he's wonderful. Like I said, he's been around for a long, long time. So so is Michael. But, yeah, we hope that you guys are staying safe with the pandemic. We got a lot to talk about next week. So tune in, and in the meantime, be safe and take care.
And with that, we'll see everybody next Sunday. Thanks, guys, and it's been a fantastic – one of my favorite subjects. It's got me all riled up, so I better go eat some dinner before I get too agitated from conspiracy talk. And we'll see everybody next Sunday. Good night, everyone.
Peace.